Hi everyone, thanks for joining us again on another episode of the Voices for Voices TV show and podcast. I am Justin Allen Hayes, founder and executive director at Voices for Voices. We just ask that you please share, like this episode and previous episodes if you want to check those out as well. Voices for Voices, again, we're trying to help and reach 3 billion people over the course of my lifetime and beyond, and if you can help us in any small way, we would really appreciate it. So in studio today, we have one of our Voices for Voices board members. She is on the Tuscarawas Carroll County Adams Board, and Adams, what that stands for is Alcohol, Drug, Mental Health Awareness. She has 12 years of sobriety, which is absolutely awesome. She'll be going into her story and her experience and sharing a little bit of that with us. She also has 10 years of community outreach experience, being part of our community, finding people that want to help others, and really just trying to have a healthy society and to be on the most positive track that we can be. Nothing's perfect, but she has 10 years of that community outreach of really trying to connect and help as many people as possible, which is one of the big reasons why we have her on our Voices for Voices board. She also has 8 years of addiction treatment experience in the services industry. So really a broad spectrum of professional experience as well as personal experience. We're going to talk a lot about our guest story, her experience, and then we're definitely going to touch on one of the hottest topics, really, not just here in Summit County, but across the United States, fentanyl and what that has looked like through the lens of our guest. So our guest today is Rebecca LeMasters. Rebecca, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, oh, you're welcome. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to share some of my story with you and share some of, the redemption that comes out of recovery and also share my experience in this field. So.
Yeah. So maybe we can start wherever you're comfortable with your personal experience, and then we can maybe shift into how that maybe help guide you professionally, and then we can go from there.
Yeah. My personal experience started with alcohol. I think a lot of people don't really recognize women still in this day and age. I mean, it's getting better. But a lot of women who are professionals, young moms, like I was in a separated relationship young in my life. I had a lot of stressors that came on me. And also, I saw a lot of people that drank alcohol and actually existed well in their life. They had good jobs, they had nice cars, they owned things. It wasn't like alcohol was related to a lot of the negativity that I know it's related to now. So that was my first journey with addiction. I would have said probably 10 years ago, I didn't think that addiction was related to alcohol because addiction was pressed so far into, a life of drugs and things that were illicit and that were illegal. And, but that's where it started. And it took a definite sobering incident to get me to where I'm at, but I was in a car accident. And during that car accident, I was actually in the hospital. And when I was in the hospital, I was actually in there with a lot of the professionals I worked with. And not only was it eye-opening, but it was also embarrassing. And, I did seek treatment, but I wasn't really looked at as a poster child for addiction. So therefore, I think that getting treatment for myself was very tough. And that's why it brought me to where I'm at today, because seeking all of those, you know, those answers and always getting turned down and being told, well, you're not really an addict. You're not really this. You're not really that. You're just going through a hard time in your life. Or, you know, you're a young mom, or you're a young professional, or you're a woman, so you can't be addicted to anything. Those things really opened my eyes and made me want to help more people, not just women, but women and men that are going through this. And I've seen it grow. And today we are just exponentially so much farther ahead than we were then. So that's why I got into community service, addiction services. I kind of left my profession in the medical field behind because I felt like my profession in the medical field maybe was a crutch to me and maybe paralleled to my addiction, because my addiction was compounding with also, you know, an opiate addiction. I had a lot of pain. I actually, my gallbladder almost burst, and instead of knowing that that was going to happen, I was heavily medicated to just keep working and keep going. And, you know, but back then, you know, we watch all the stories now that are on like Netflix and all the TV shows. And I think that prescriptions were pushed on people for pain because we didn't want people to be in pain. But we also had all these pharmaceutical companies that were making so much money off of these prescriptions. And we were so illy educated, you know, in every profession and just in our daily lives, like the general community wasn't really educated on, you know, how the even addiction with a prescription. If you had a prescription, it was legal. If you drank alcohol, it's legal. So how can that be an addiction? So I've really grown out of those things and grown up and have educated myself and others around me. So
yeah, and I'm glad you went into that. I'm not glad you went through the experience, but I mean today going into you know, how you may have been viewed as taking a hard, longer time to get help because maybe you weren't in the demographic that like, oh, you're fine, just you know work through it. And and I've even felt and have felt in my recovery very similar of I need help, something's going on, I don't know what it is, and it's a doctor visit, ER visit.
Yeah.
And for me, the you know the siren was on, the light was blinking, but it, even some family members were like, oh yeah, just you know just take a deep breath, go for a walk, just work yeah. through it.
Put it down. You can put it down anytime. You know.
Yeah. And I think that's key for our listeners or viewers, and whether they're you know, here in Summit County or you know across the world, we have followers and people that. Have found a big interest in Voices for Voices, to just know and understand that if you're going through something tough, that you need to really be an advocate for yourself, and you need to keep going until you feel you're getting that adequate response from the medical community, from family, that people are really buying in, because addiction, regardless, you know, substance, alcohol, whatever, however you want to call it. Are things that they don't know demographics or zip codes. It affects a lot
of people.
And I think what you were saying is very
I mean, I don't see, and I don't really see, and you know, now I don't just see addiction. I see dual problems. You know, it's dual with mental health. It's dual with compounding addiction. It's dual with, you know, trauma and codependency. And I think that a lot of the things that are missing are, you know, I mean, the support system. The support is there more in the community and the government offices and even doctor's offices. And, you know, healthcare is really getting there. But I think in the mental health industry, we really have stepped it up in the last, especially the last 3 years, especially for people that are professionals and are working. And, I mean, like you said, addiction, it has really no demographic, it has no population, it has no zip code. It affects everyone, but I think that, you know, those agencies and those people are starting to see us as one, and some of the stigmas are starting to fall off. So, and I feel like, I hope that I'm part of that journey, so.
Yeah, so how does that make you feel that you're part of the solution, that you yourself have gone through experiences, but that you're part of that solution, not just you personally of being an advocate for yourself, but you know, really extended the arms to the community.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really proud of that. I'm probably more proud of that than anything other than like my family and my children mm-hmm. and all of their accomplishments. But you know, logistically and professionally, like that, like getting a seat on the Adams board is probably one of the highest accomplishments in my professional life and in my life in general at this point. I mean, I sit on that board with amazing men and women who are just, you know, top tier of who you can go to and who you can get resources from. And I feel like the Adams boards in general have grown into more of an approachable service in the past, you know, 5 to 3 years, I guess 3 to 5 years. I mean, before that, you know, when I was, you know, first suffering with this, I didn't even know what an Adams board was. Yeah. I didn't know what, you know, the drug task force agency was. I didn't know anything. Like you said, we just went to the emergency room. We looked for help and we sought out doctors and nurses and sometimes lawyers and, yeah. you know, people to just kind of get us out of harm's way, not to really shelter us and keep us going in a healthy lifestyle. So that's really what you need. You have to really build your foundation and your core in recovery, and then you have to stand upon that, and then you have to have resources that also are going to help you stand up. Because, I mean, you know, relapse is a real thing in recovery, and you have to have people in your personal and professional life that are, you know, willing to see the signs and the symptoms, and you have to want to be honest with those people as well. So I think a lot of that has opened up in the last couple years.
What's your feeling about individuals working for organizations that are supporting the community? Take a person like yourself, myself, has that lived experience versus that book experience. Are there things for those individuals that have the book experience that you think are maybe missing? Like, I don't know, whether it, treatment of yourself or people that you've known that, yeah. like, oh, well, if that person had been through, you know, some of the things they're suggesting, you know, that's not really going to help me. I know it's in a book, but that's not going to help in real life.
Yeah, I think that's where we really started was, you know, you gave somebody a test in an office setting, and that test told you whether they were addicted to something or whether they had a mental health issue or whether they, you know, those are things that are very square. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of us have a very round problem. So that round peg doesn't fit in that square spot. And I think that now people are seeing that. And I think that you have to have the education mm-hmm. compiled with the experience to really build a great plan. But I'm so glad that so many people that are not educated come out with their stories. And I mean, like, look at all of the social media and people that are coming out and saying, this is where I was, this is where I am now, such as ourselves, you know, having a podcast and, you know, really speaking on these issues gives you a united front. But I don't think that there is like a line of demarcation. I don't think anybody's drawn a line in the sand and said, like, you have to be educated to treat this, or you have to be, I mean, obviously you need certain degrees to work in certain facilities, and that obviously makes sense because of how the state is structured and to protect people. You know, we have HIPAA laws and things like that. But they're also hiring a lot of people that are non-college educated but have, you know, like real street smarts and boots on the ground experience, because that's something that you really can't teach. You know, it's something that, like you said, it's just, it happens to you and you learn from it. And I think that's how my life went. Everywhere from, you know, getting, when I was young, you know, learning how to get a medical card and learning how to, you know, get food and get housing, and all of these things have helped me now letting someone else know that's in, you know, was in my shoes, know how to get to that faster and easier. But it takes those people that sit in those offices every day to also get us to where we need to be. And so we really need to work together. So I think that, you know, there's no difference between the education and the street smarts, except for the piece of, you know, the diploma and the piece of paper. But, mm-hmm. you know, you have to have that so people can be protected as well. So
I had a conversation with somebody in the medical field a couple days ago, and we were having a conversation about what happens, let's say, if somebody has an inpatient stay at the hospital, you know, what happens from that point on, and the conversation was, okay, you get this piece of paper, you get this referral, you're leaving the hospital, you might not be able to see somebody for a day or two. What happens in between there? Like, how are you able to provide food and shelter? What's been your experience on kind of maybe that piece of...
That is a... That, now, bringing that into the setting, there is a large, I guess, gap in our services where that is concerned. I can tell you from my experience, I think I was a little bit a step ahead of the game working for different treatment centers and different addiction service industry providers, because I was that person. Okay. So I knew how to get there. But if you haven't had that experience, and this is like your, like, say this is your first time dealing with addiction, or your first or second time, and you go from the ER, they give you a referral, and let's say you have to go back into the court system, and the judge says, okay, I want 1 through 5 done within 10 weeks, and you have no one to guide you. You have no one to tell you where all these services are. You don't know what to do. I mean, that's where we set people up to fail. So what we're doing now, I feel like people are listening. A lot of the judges are listening. A lot of the doctors are listening. And what they're doing is they're putting liaisons in those positions to guide someone, or they're putting someone like a community outreach representative, or, you know, the Adams Board. A lot of emergency rooms join with the Adams Board because they have those resources. So they'll reach out to that person and give the board the name of that person legally, because they need help getting to all of these different places. I mean, it's like a game of Monopoly, right? Yeah. I mean, you start here, you're in trouble, you're destitute, you feel like nothing is going to help, right? But then you have to jump so many steps. Well, you don't do it on your own. No. You know, you have to have a team to help you get there. And I think that we're still working on that. There are still so many places that need to understand that you have to have that person in place, like that liaison in place. But we also have a lot of different companies that do that as well. Like, there's Thrive. And I mean, there's a couple of different ones that I could definitely mention. But, you know, connecting with them through my career as a business development director, I not only did they refer people to me, but I was able to refer people to them, and they are the middle ground. So we really have to talk more about those services as well. So I'm glad that you brought that up, especially with, you know, right now with fentanyl being such an epidemic. I mean, we don't even have like an opiate task force anymore, because the grants don't pertain to just opiates any longer, because of all of the different methamphetamines, fentanyl, like all the different drugs that are coming in. We've had to change even the verbiage of the way we get funding to do these things because of all these gaps that are being filled. So I hope that answers your question. Yeah. It's kind of a long answer, but it takes us into like the next subject, which is kind of like how the face of not only addiction, but the face of drug use has changed so drastically over the 10 years. You know, I mean, it used to be alcohol, and I mean, alcohol and heroin were, you know, two of the biggest that we talked about. And then there, you know, there's cocaine and things that we all like, not if we were sitting around the dinner table, we're going to discuss, but we know what they are. Now there's so many different names for drugs. There's so many different ways people can get these drugs, and how they're administered and how people are ingesting drugs is just beyond my comprehension, even as someone who, you know, was kind of in that seat. I mean, I had a prescription and I was buying something off the shelf. So even I had to educate myself on all these different things. I had to take training for, you know, Narcan, you know, and I know that we have, you know, great projects out there like the Dawn Project and all the health departments, you know, they teach how to administer it. But now we see big billboards for Narcan, where just 2 years ago, it was like taboo to even like talk about it. You know, and people were just like, oh, I'm not going to have that in my car. I'm not going to administer it. But I mean, I literally find myself looking at people in a parking lot if their head's down and maybe they just might be resting. Yeah. The first thing that comes to my mind is, do I need to get my kit? Do I need to help this person? I mean, we're just in a different society now. So, you know.
Yeah. And yeah, like you said, not just fentanyl, you know, the other synthetics like xylazine, which takes things to it.
Yes.
Another level. But then also, there was a recent news story about five or six fourth graders went to school, and one of the fourth graders passed out candy. I don't know if it was gummy bears or the like, and they started to get sick, and the fourth graders ended up at the hospital, and they found out that there were trace amounts of fentanyl in the baggie.
Yeah.
And so then the authorities traced that back to where the child got that from. And so when we talk about like the demographics, there's no demographic that is excluded. And I mean, if we're going down to fourth graders or candy, I mean, having an almost five-year-old, it's scary because you have to worry about an extra thing. Like, oh, okay, well, my daughter's at ballet or she's at gymnastics, and her friend says, oh, we want some Cheez-Its. Or like, oh, wait, the bag's already open? Like, we got to get our test strips. It's very extreme,
but I mean, I think the majority of us don't treat it as an extreme issue when we're out in our daily lives. I mean, you have to live, right? Yeah. You have to, I mean, you're living a life every day. You have to, you have to work, you have to pay your bills, you have to go on with life. But I think that it is up to us to do our part to educate the general population on these things, because just like that story, you know, there's other stories and there's other problems that come along with these types of addictions and these types of drug use. I mean, we could get into a lot of them. We could get into trafficking. We could get into abduction and all of these things that are taking place. And, you know, it used to be a lot of officers would come on, they would do, you know, like a training on just touching fentanyl and what it could do to you or ingesting it just from being around it. But now we have to take that a step further. Like if you're in a public restroom and you turn on the blower, you know, there was just a proven fact that they were doing that in public restrooms. They were putting fentanyl bags in the hand dryers. I mean, like, can you imagine that? But you know, it's like, what are these people thinking? So thank God we have professionals to get behind that part of this, you know, epidemic. We're on another part of the front lines, which is community awareness. But, you know, like I said, thank God and thank goodness that we have all of those people that are, you know, risking their lives every day to stop these things far beyond our reach, you know. But it is something that you do think about in this profession every day because, you know, of all of the Narcan training and all of the things that we can, you know, the services we can get to help us. You know, there are a ton of grants out there that are just amazing that if you apply for them and you do actually get the funding for it, you can do so much with this grant money to help your community. So,
So being, right this second, we're in Summit County, but with you being on the Tuscarosa and Carol Adams board, countywide, state of Ohio, how are the counties, are there certain counties that are doing better or worse, the services, How do you see that with what your role is now?
I think that in Tuscarawas County, of course, that's, you know, I mean, that's where I spend predominantly most of my time is Tuscarawas, Stark, and not with the Adams board, but I'm in Stark County a lot. And, you know, mm-hmm. I do cross over into Carroll County just with what I do. And I think that Tuscarawas County is doing an amazing job. I think they're doing an excellent job. I'm not an expert on any of that, so I could just give you my opinion on what I see and how I see people responding and the programs that we have. And you know, you have to look at the numbers of, you know, who's going through the court system, and you know, you have to look at the numbers of arrests and things like that to compile like all the statistics that mm-hmm. really answer those questions. I don't have those in front of me, but my opinion is that I think that Tuscarawas County is doing great. I think that they really just, they jump on, you know, problems, and they try to, if they can't extinguish them, they try to find the resources and the right people to put in place to help with them. I can tell you that from the jails clear up to the courts, clear up to, you know, we have a new hospital system in our small area, which has been a definite learning curve. I won't speak too much on that, but you know, having that system come into our small area and having to acclimate to their aesthetics and the way that they do things has been really eye-opening to how fast we used to get services, and now we kind of have to go by their steps. And so I think that every county and every community has those jumps or those hoops to jump through, mm-hmm. and I think they're all doing a good job, mm-hmm. you know, but as a whole, I think we still have work to do, right. you know. There's never not work to do. We're actually going to be opening up a new men's residential treatment center in our small county of Tuscarawas County, and that speaks volumes to how far we have come with, you know, extinguishing stigmas, getting mm-hmm. property to build this place. Mike Dotz is on our Adams board, and he's done a phenomenal job as, you know, giving us all of the facts and on this project. And you guys could look it up. There was a press release on it, and it's just, it's amazing because this is what I have fought for my entire time in recovery. Mm-hmm. I have fought for the courts and the judicial system, along with the medical care providers and the mental health providers, mm-hmm. to find a common ground to help people. Like, you can't just ignore it, and you can't just arrest people. Like, it's not going to go away. And I think with, you know, the people that we have in place, we've really grown as a community, and mm-hmm. we are putting those services in place. But I think we still need some help with sober living, and we need some more places for women as well. You know, I'm just going to say that out loud. We need more meetings for women, and we're definitely going further on that front. So
anybody in the audience listening, viewing, reach out to Rebecca if you have ideas, if you have resources. That's part of what this platform is also for. Yeah. So to kind of close things out, we're coming up on our time. What's maybe the number one topic you get a call about? To give our viewers and listeners an idea of, like, what are you being called for? And just to get people like, oh, wow, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the most common.
Yeah. So I think right now a big thing that I'm getting called on for are veterans that are in a tough spot,
okay.
with, you know, veterans court, with addiction, with mm-hmm. There's a lot of female veterans that are actually, they suffered through addiction, and now they're suffering through not pregnancy or childbirth, but they're going to be mothers to be. Mm-hmm. And they don't necessarily know where to go, what to do. They don't necessarily have a place to land. So we need some more services for, you know, people that are in that demographic, for people that are expecting mothers, and the fathers that may be supporting them, or fathers that are going to have children with someone that's expecting either addiction on either side. We really need resources for that. So I welcome any resources where that's concerned. I know every community is trying to grow, but we really don't look at those numbers of how relapse hits women in postpartum. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to look more at that. And like I said, back to veterans. I mean, a lot of veterans are suffering, and the VA does a great job, but we still don't have enough treatment centers that really, I guess, offer services specifically for, you know, veterans in our area. And it's hard for them to get there because they have to jump through a lot of hoops too to get, you know, the insurance and, you know, through the military, and they have to have so many no's to get to a provider that is outside of, you know, the realm of what the military says or where they should go. Not that those aren't good providers, but, you know, I mean, recovery is an individual thing. It's not cookie cutter. Yeah. It doesn't work for everybody. So I welcome new treatment centers and owners and operators of those centers to contact yourself or me. Yeah. And please let us know what their programs are all about, because we could really share that in a broad spectrum. So those are some of the things that I think we're struggling with. And our adolescents and our teens. I mean, how many places do you know where we can send our teens? I mean, off the top of your head, it's really hard to, you know those places and know who has, you know, the best program. So I think that, you know, just making ourselves more aware of mental health from ages, you know, 12 to 40 are what we have to keep working on. So.
And as far as contact information, how can people reach out to you on LinkedIn?
Yeah.
How would you
prefer? Can definitely reach out to me on LinkedIn under Rebecca LeMasters. I have a small resume on there. Not everything is on there, but, you know, a lot of people know me through the addiction services industry. I work with, I'm obviously connected to you with Voices for Voices. You're a great way to get to me. Mm-hmm. I think that my bio is on our website as well as a couple other websites. I work with, the Adams Board. I'm not necessarily the person you would get connected with, but if you call me, I can connect you with any service provider. I also, you know, I'm connected with the health departments and anyone clear up into, if you need help getting into, you know, a place for assisted living, if you're in the demographic of 55 to 75, you know, I can help with that as well. I mean, I really have not pigeonholed myself. Yeah. I've really got a broad outlook on who I can help. And I mean, I'm glad to do that through Voices for Voices.
Yeah, and we're happy to have you on the board. All the work that you do, the doors you open, the ideas, and there's, you know, some bigger ideas and things that we're going to be collaborating on in 2024.
Yeah, we're definitely talking about some good stuff, and I think we're going to be at a Walk in Their Shoes as well. I'm going to be speaking, and thank you for supporting me in that. And last year, you know, we were there as well, and I think that that's going to be a great collaborating event. And you know, the people who run that are amazing. So, and there's a little bit more in depth where, you know, your higher power comes into play with that. So, you know, that would be great as well.
Yeah. Well, Rebecca, thanks for joining us today. Yeah.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And thank you, our viewers, our listeners, checking out the transcript here in Summit County, across Ohio, across the U.S., and across the world. This is a TV show and podcast that our organization Voices for Voices is sponsoring. I am Justin Allen Hayes, the founder and executive director. And please share, please like this episode, and check out other episodes. We're well over 100 here in 24, going towards 200. And until next time, we hope you have a great day and be a voice for you or somebody in need.